This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us, our old friend, Professor Richard Wolff. He is an economist. He is the co-founder of Democracy at Work. His most recent book, Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown. His website, democracyatwork.info, and, of course, his personal website, rdwolff, with two Fs, .com. I'm not sure it's personal. It also, you know, has all that kind of cool stuff on it. Professor Wolff, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. I found this article this morning on the Huffington Post and wanted to bounce it off you. It's titled Vienna's Affordable Housing Paradise. And basically, it talks about how, well, just to quote from it, today, anyone earning up to $53,000 a year after taxes is eligible to apply for a subsidized apartment in Vienna. And this is a country where the median gross annual income is only $31,000. So, you know, if you're earning under about twice the average income, you qualify for discounted housing. The average income in the United States is in the 40s, as I recall. So this would be anyone earning under $80,000 would get subsidized housing in the United States. 62% of Vienna's citizens currently live in what they call social housing, compared to 1% of America's population. What does this mean? And what does it mean about how societies can be organized to create middle classes? How it may be that a middle class doesn't just naturally emerge. In fact, in a totally laissez-faire state, you would have very little middle class. That it has to be crafted essentially by government, sir.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have been to Vienna. I have visited friends and associates who live in the social housing units that they have all over the city. You wouldn't know that you were in public housing. That is, if you come from the United States, your image of public housing is somewhere between horrible and disastrous in most cases. There are a few exceptions. But mostly it's very poor people, and these things are not very well maintained. So when you arrive at the social housing in Vienna, you don't imagine, unless someone explains it to you, that these wonderfully landscaped, spick and span, clean, comfortable, roomy apartments are social housing. So let's inquire. Back in the 1920s, when socialists were the government in Austria, they committed to building mass quality public housing. The logic in their minds, which Americans I think can understand, is that housing is as important in its way as education is. So if you're going to create a public school system rather than letting everybody get to school if they can afford it, if you're going to have a public education system to help build your people and a middle class, etc., then you should do the same for housing. And they never looked back. That's why 60%, as you pointed out, or over 60% live in it. By the way, the average percentage paid for rent by these people is around 25-26% of their income, which is where economists mostly think a decent portion of your income should go for rent, but not beyond that. And by comparison, across the United States, the percentage is much, much higher. So, yes, I think it illustrates beautifully that if you want a society of a middle class, of people who get along with each other, who can live and recreate and have some time off and lead the kind of lives that not only they prefer, but it's better for all of those who come in contact with them, then you have to do the kinds of things that Vienna has done. And it has, boy, has it stood the test of time. It's now a 100-year-old experiment, and whether right-wing or left-wing governments have come and gone in Austria, none of them has dared touch this system because it is overwhelmingly supported by the Viennese people.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable stuff. And yet here in the United States, we have billionaire oligarchs who call themselves libertarians, who believe that this is socialism or worse, communism, that it is antithetical to the values of the United States, or at least the values of the billionaire class. They are supported by their fellow billionaire oligarch, Rupert Murdoch, who programs a television network to, you know, with multi-million dollar stars like Sean Hannity, worth tens of millions of dollars, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars, and pitch to the average schlub, the average guy in America, the average guy and gal in America, that, hey, you know, the interests of the billionaires are really your interests. You want to see taxes go down on rich people. You want to see an end to public housing. You want to see an end to food stamps. You want to see an end to programs that, you know, like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid that hold the middle class together. You want to see an end to public education, voucherize and privatize everything. And people are buying this, Professor Wolf.
Yes, and that's why a trip, if you could arrange it, Tom, take Americans randomly chosen to Vienna for a week. I guarantee you they have never seen anything like.
Well this is what Michael Moore did with his movie Where to Invade Next.
Right. Literally, you could maybe do it in that way with the wonders of the internet and all the rest, just to give people a sense. I noticed that in this country, I've heard it many times, and most recently from the housing secretary, Carson, that there is a deliberate effort to keep public housing looking the way it usually does and deteriorated the way it usually is, in order not, in their lovely language, to let people become dependent on help from the government in the form of quality housing. The Viennese experiment, now 100 years old, testifies to the extraordinary quality of life. There's an award given every year in Europe for the most livable city. That includes London, Paris, Berlin, you name it. Vienna wins it hands down, I think 9 out of the last 10 years, because of course if you have a mass of people who live in a beautiful home and therefore have enough money because of the low rents to maintain the coffee shops and all the other amenities that make living in a place beautiful, you have a completely different quality of life than the kind of gentrification extremes such as those we have here in New York City, where a 10-minute subway ride can take you to the most richest neighborhood in the world, and then 10 minutes later into the worst poverty you can see in the Western Hemisphere. It's just a completely different way of understanding what collective life in a community could and should be.
And yet the response to that you will get from you know, billionaire Murdoch and his Fox network and the multimillionaire broadcasters on that network, or from multimillionaire Rush Limbaugh or these other guys, is, well, yeah, of course, you can have everybody have decent housing, but that means that you're going to have to raise my taxes. You're going to steal money from me that I earned with the sweat of my brow and the intellect of my mind, and that is rightfully mine. You're talking about the redistribution of wealth. That, sir, is communism.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and I can understand their hysteria. And I would put it this way. They have to whip up whatever crazy notion they can to tap into whatever they can reach in people not to do or to make an experiment of doing what the Viennese did. And the reason they have to go to these strange lengths with these crazy arguments is that they know what Vienna proves. Once the people understood what you can have in the way of a modern society, nobody would ever get them to go back to what we have in this country now.
Well, and this is true of the, you know, out of the 34 richest countries in the world, the 34 OECD nations, 33 of them, including, you know, Canada on the high end of wealth and Costa Rica at the very bottom, have national health care systems. The only one that doesn't is the United States. And, you know, Canada, Tommy Douglas is revered in Canada the way we think of George Washington. He was the politician who started that program in Canada Winnipeg, wherever it was, somewhere out west there back in the 60s and or maybe the 50s. And it's like this, you know, they're not going to go back. It's like, well, I would say Americans, you know, they don't want to go back on Social Security and Medicare.
No, because once you get it and you understand the difference it can make in the case of Social Security, that old people have a sense they will not be a burden on their children, or at least less of one than they might otherwise have been, and young people understand what a better relationship you can have with your elderly relatives if you're not crowding in on an insufficient economic basis. If you could just extend that awareness to make it clear, imagine a health service where an operation wouldn't be the great catastrophe, or a housing that gave you a nice, comfortable place that would allow you to focus on the other parts of your life rather than desperately worrying about where you'll sleep. It's a different, it's not just a different house. It's a whole different way of life in which you understand we're going to help each other be an effective community rather than accumulate as much as we can and let the chips fall where they may, even though it looks
But isn't the price but the price paid for that, Professor Wolf, is that if somebody in Austria has earned $1 billion and wants to turn it into $5 billion, they're going to find it very difficult. And they may be able to turn it into $1.3 billion or $1.6 billion, but, you know, doubling, tripling the way that, you know, here in the United States, I mean, we saw the Koch brothers just in the last decade or so go from being worth $10 billion to being worth, what, $80, $90 billion. Among others. I mean, and that somehow Americans have it in our heads that billionaires being able to get mind-bogglingly rich, even as the middle class sinks into the mud, is a good thing.
Yeah, they think it until the mud becomes unbearable.
Right.
You know, Americans are going to have to face that as Mr. Jeffrey Bezos has his $150 billion, which I saw yesterday's headline, of personal wealth and vast numbers of Americans can't afford to send their kids to get a college education, you're going to see, it'll take time, but you're going to see a recognition that allowing a handful of people, and that's what we're talking about, to become a billionaires, while the vast majority of people are struggling in ways we don't need to have them struggle because we have the resources to take care of everybody. In the end, the democratic impulse of what's good for the majority is more important than what's good for the minority will work its way forward.
From your lips to God's ears, sir. Professor Richard Wolf, his most recent book is Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, and his website, Democracy at Work. You can tweet him at Prof. Wolf with two Fs. Dr. Wolf, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Talk to you again soon.
Indeed. Good talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Dave in New Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Dave, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good.
Listen, I don't think we have a free media. I know, I think you mentioned that before. I mean, a liberal press. I think our press is very conservative, and I think our press completely built up Trump out of whole cloth. I think that was part of the plan to get him in there and apply a bit of a shock to the system.
I strongly disagree. I don't think that the media sat around and said, hey, you know, let's get Trump into office and let's have a shock to the system. I think what the media did is they sat around and they said, you know, you've got a bunch of boring politicians here. You know, Jeb Bush really was low energy, Jeb. You got a bunch of boring politicians talking wonky policy. And then you got this guy who's a TV star and made millions and millions of dollars for NBC. And this guy knows how to draw the camera. He knows how to draw eyeballs. The more we put this guy on TV, the more money we're going to make. And that's the business we're in. We're not in the business of providing people with news. We're in the business of making money. And so they saw Donald Trump coming down the road in the Republican primary, and they said, wow, you know, we will make money with Donald Trump. And Donald Trump knew that going into it. It's how he did it. It's how he exploited everything that's going on. And frankly, he's continuing to do it. But I don't think that they sat around, you know, the NBC. I mean, you know, Les Moonves came right out and said it in an investor call. You know, he said it may be terrible for America, but it's great for CBS.
Yeah, but let's not forget that early on when Sanders was having these rallies where tens of thousands of people were showing up, and they completely ignored him, but they were covering Trump when he only had a few hundred people at his rallies. That's kind of where it started. And I think it was very clear that and I understand what you're saying. I still think that, you know, the corporate media, let's you know, put that in quote, because it is corporate media. You know, the fact that Trump is in there, I mean, they're benefiting from his policies. Like there's, you know, it's what they've been wishing for a long time. So he's passed these tax cuts. he's got that tour. He's still getting them. He's still very entertaining, so he's bringing the audiences in. But it's economic. It's economic agenda that was the main reason that they were covering him. I think that's the thing you're missing there. I think you're kind of focusing too much on the smoke and mirrors.
His economic agenda is one of the things that got him elected, Dave. Trump was running on the traditionally Democratic Party position of tariffs.
Let's not forget there was also the same media that did not report any of the facts about the WMDs and the the lead up to the war in Iraq, and it's the same media that did not report anything about Trump's stiffing of workers, of his fraud, of his pathological lying, of his connections with the Russian mafia. That was all out there.
You're right, Dave. And the reality is that the stockholders of CBS and the multimillionaires who run CBS all just got huge tax cuts, and they're probably very, very happy about that. And I'm guessing that one of the reasons that Bernie got very little coverage in the media, throughout the campaign, but particularly in the first 6 months, it was total radio silence, was because Bernie's main message was, I'm going to raise taxes on rich people.
Exactly, exactly, and I think that's the thing. I think that I don't know if you've read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine.
I have.
I just kind of read that, and that kind of connects a lot of the dots.
It does.
I think we can't forget that it was also the reason Putin is leader of Russia, because of our failure to really help Russia out of this time of need.
I gotta bail here, Dave. I'm sorry. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yep, the Republicans just voted to block subpoenaing the translator in the room with Trump and Putin. So we will never know what the commitments were that Donald Trump made to Putin, other than that President Putin is coming out and saying, or the Russian government is coming out and saying, hey, let's do that stuff that Trump agreed to. And American diplomats are like, what stuff is that? Bill in Missouri. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
Hey, yeah, the lady was right that you talked to earlier, and I didn't realize it to a later age that the country has always been split, and that's a shame. Those people are here to stay, and they're in charge now. And like you were talking about, the guy who wrote the article, when do we start killing? If that starts, I've talked to people around the country, some in the military, and I said, would half the military split? And one guy looked at me like surprised. He goes, you're onto it. He goes, yeah. He goes, that's being discussed.
Yeah.
So that's what made, if it gets that serious, if half the military split, because remember Standing Rock when the veterans showed up?
Yeah.
The security backed down.
Yeah, but for a short time, for a few days. But eventually they took out those veterans.
Because the veterans have killed. Some of those veterans have killed before.
Yeah.
And they're not going to, they're ready to do that. I hope it doesn't go
well,
that
way.
Well,
what you're speaking to, Bill, was my rebuttal or my response to the guy who said we all need to buy AR-14s or 15s or whatever they are. And I said, no, what we need to do is strengthen the institutions of democracy in the United States.
Yes.
But
if it.
Go ahead.
What I'm saying is I was glad to hear that the military, there's guys that they don't want to stand for this. They don't want that kind of regime in power.
Yeah.
They don't want it. And then I think this is going to be worldwide with Duterte, Putin, the Egyptian guy. They've already started to purge their people. They're starting to, they've already started the blood fest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Erdogan's got 35,000 people in prison just in the last year. Yeah. I get it. I totally get it. Thank you for the call. Tony in Huntsville, Alabama. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind?
Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Listen, in Huntsville, Alabama, man, I just want to let you know that these people, these Trump supporters, they have their American flags. They've got their Alabama state flags with the picture of the state of Alabama with the Red Cross, St. Augustine Cross, and they're in full attack mode. They are ready for the word to be given.
Wow.
That said, I believe
Quickly, Tony.
That they're using the same on blacks that they did on whites with Obama.
There you go. I agree. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back in just a minute. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Dorothy tweets about National Popular Vote, at NATL Popular Vote. I'm pretty sure the website is National Popular Vote. Yeah, it is, nationalpopularvote.com. And definitely worth checking out if apropos of our concern about how our elections went. Leila Abdulaziz is with us with the, she's the digital organizer with Fight for the Future. Fightforthefuture.org is the website. And Leila, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back.
So today there are actions all across the country to fight for net neutrality. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, that's right. So we have about 68 actions outside of Target House congressional offices across the country today. We are working to get the right amount of votes that we need in the House to force a vote on the CRA, the Congressional Review Act resolution that the Senate has already passed, and pass it through the House. We're less than 40 members away from the votes that we need to force a vote on the CRA in the House. And we organized members and net neutrality supporters from across the country to rally outside of strategically identified House offices today and to deliver a letter from small businesses that are calling on House members to support the CRA.
And Leila, people can find out information on that at fightforthefuture.org. Is this something that just you guys are doing, or is this part of a coalition of other groups as well?
Yeah, this is definitely part of a coalition. We're working with our partners Demand Progress on this action, as well as our partners at Free Press have also been supporting events, and many, many other organizations and allies across the country.
Great.
We're seeing hundreds of people have turned out to these events already today. The event in the East Coast just passed, and we had a lot of positive report backs from people talking to the staff of their House members and just really calling for accountability and reminding these House reps that this is not over, that the internet has not forgotten about this issue, that Congress has a chance to save net neutrality this year, and the CRA is their only chance to do so.
So this is like your opportunity to be a citizen lobbyist, and also the telephone number for Congress, if you want to call, is 202-224-3121 and ask for your member. This is in the House of Representatives. And what we're trying to do is get what's called a discharge petition, which forces Paul Ryan to hold a vote on whether or not to basically reverse FCC Chairman Ajit Pai's action of destroying net neutrality. If we reverse that, we get net neutrality back. We're back under Title II of the Telecommunications Code. Do I have all that right, Leila?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Cool.
I know it's a lot. It sounds a bit complicated, but the CRA is a unique rule that Congress has to basically oversee federal agencies such as the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. So if the House passes this, again, the Senate has already passed the resolution in a historic 52-47 vote, and now we're looking for just under 40 more representatives to join the CRA effort to force the vote, which would see us pass it in the House.
That's great. And these are all Republicans you need. Are there any Democrats who haven't signed on yet?
There are probably 15 or 16 more Democrats that have not signed on yet. And I think I can, off the top of my mind, I know that, for example, the Philadelphia area representatives have yet to sign on to the CRA. So there's very, very few. There's only a handful of Democrats. We expect them to come on in the coming weeks. We're asking their constituents to keep reminding them, to keep asking them to do the right thing, and we hope that they will. But yeah, there's still about 15 Democrats that we're waiting to see them sign on the CRA.
Okay. If you guys could email me that list, I would be glad to promote it on the air. That is to say, you know, please call and courteously and friendly, you know, ask these people who are, you know, presumably on your side to do the right thing. So
absolutely. Absolutely. We have to remind them that the Democratic caucus in the Congress has created a position on this. It is asking all Democratic members to sign on to the CRA. So now it comes down to constituents, I think, to really show these representatives that they care and that this matters and that they're paying attention.
There we go. Leila Abdelaziz, the website fightforthefuture.org. And Leila, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Have
great.
A great day.
Thanks, you too. Great talking with you. Okay, let's pick up some of your phone calls here and get back to some of the topics we've been covering. Jennifer in Seattle. Hey, Jennifer, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a point. I think a lot of Republicans are forgetting their basic Sunday school teaching, which is the devil can quote scripture. I double majored in psychology and sociology, and this is actually a pattern that we see on both the micro and macro level throughout history. Autocrats and tyrants use propaganda to turn their followers against the ideals and values of the society. Abusers brainwash their victims to turn them against family and friends, to isolate them, which just makes them more dependent on the abuser, so they will defend the abuser more fiercely. And, you know, I just, you know, villains will always use slick language to sucker you. The devil can quote scripture, and this is exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I think that it would do a lot of Republicans well to remember basic Sunday school teaching.
You said it brilliantly. That was a very, very, very articulate, very clear, very got it. Jennifer, thank you. That was nice and tight and right to the point. Steve in Topanga, California. Hey, Steve, what's up?
I just want to make a point that I think that the problem, how we got to where we are, is the dumbing down of our educational system and the lack of historical knowledge through education. And the other point I'd like to make is I think that there's so few people that vote anymore, that maybe half the eligible voting population votes, and then you divide that in half, so a quarter of the eligible voting population is electing, you know, on the national level.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe mandatory voting might be needed, because it's all predicated on being a participatory republic.
Yeah, it works in Australia. We had Professor Richard Silberstein on the program when he was visiting Louise and I here a couple of weeks ago, and he's Australian. And he was talking about how people in Australia love it. They don't mind the fact that, you know, they get an addition to their tax bill if they fail to vote. Instead, they show up and they vote. And, you know, they don't make it hard to vote, by the way, there either. You don't have to stand in line for hours. And voting's done, you know, in ways that doesn't interfere with your ability to go to work. So,
right.
You know, it's not quite as painful as we've made it here. But I think your point is really, really well made, Steve. Thank you very much for the call. Bingo. James in Spokane, Washington. Hey, James, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was noticing you talking about Rupert Murdoch earlier.
Yeah.
We're all aware, I'm sure, that RT was forced to register as a foreign agent.
Yep.
If Rupert Murdoch's not a naturalized citizen, shouldn't he and Fox News be required also?
He is a naturalized citizen.
Oh, heck, can we shoot him anyway?
I mean, that doesn't mean that he can't register as an agent of a foreign government, but I don't think that Fox News is an agent of a foreign government. I think they are an agent of the worldwide billionaire class. And the worldwide billionaire class has an agenda, and it's splitting the middle class apart. That's their agenda. Destroy the middle class. Split these people from each other. Turn people against each other in every way you can. If you can separate them by race, great. If you can separate them by class, even better. If you can separate them by religion, super, use it. If you can separate them by just figure out any way you can. And the billionaire class, through their vehicles of the very well-funded right-wing hate radio, and this Ken Vogel did this piece in Politico 2-3 years ago talking about how billionaire money via the Koch brothers being laundered essentially through the Heritage Foundation and others is ending up in the pockets to the tunes of millions of dollars a year, ending up in the pockets of Hannity and Limbaugh and all these other right-wing talk show hosts. Nothing like that happens on the left. There's nobody writing checks to me, you know, or any other progressive host. We're doing okay, but it's not like that. And you know, you've got this right-wing infrastructure that has been built over the years that you know, the main goal of it is to convince the average person that whatever's good for the billionaires is good for them, whether it's dialing back on environmental regulations, somehow that's going to get you a job. Or, you know, in fact, actually, you know, environmental regulations create jobs. Somebody's got to design those scrubbers. Somebody has to install those smokestack scrubbers. Somebody has to clean those smokestack scrubbers. These are all jobs, right? But you know, it's like this is their job, is to convince us of these things. So anyhow, James, I get your point. Marta in Big Bear Lake, California. Hey, Marta, what's up?
Yes, hi. In regards to this article that you read, I don't know. I've never heard of that guy before, but I was involved with the Ross Perot campaign back around 1991, I guess, right after the savings and loan crisis had almost put me out on the street, wiped me out, and I was angry. And the core group of Perot campaigners, we were out on the streets all the time, passing out literature and everything. And you know, there was a lot of anger there. And I got to know these people, and you know, we talked a lot. They talked a lot about the Trilateral Commission, One World Government, the Council on Foreign Relations, and how the Democrats and the Republicans were part of this One World Government thing. And you know, a lot of it, I mean, I wasn't into that kind of thing. They were worried about guns, or gun rights being lost. And what I'm coming to, you know, doing a lot of reflecting on that. And I think that what's going on today with these, this cultural divide is that a lot of people have lost, a lot of fear. They fear the loss of democracy. NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, were horrible.
Right.
And you know, people have some real, real issues.
Oh, there are real concerns. You're absolutely right. And Ross Perot tapped into those, and there was a whole right-wing group that did attach themselves to them. Marta, thanks for the call. Thanks for your, and thanks for making that point. We'll be back. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in 4 minutes with Bob Ney with Talk Media News. And welcome back. And let's see here, Steve in Chicago. Steve, I've got to put you back on hold. You're listening to WCPT, which is in commercial break right now. Let's see, Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hello, Tom. Yeah, this is, I told you before, this is the Kreiner family. Now I want to know about all these Russian collaborators, such as the congressmen and senators that are all backing Donald Trump. Back in Joe McCarthy's day, he would have had a circus over here.
Yeah.
Because Trump is involved with the communists.
Well, the Russians aren't communists anymore, Corky. They are hyper-capitalists. The Russians are more, they're practicing a purer, a more laissez form of capitalism in Russia than we do here. It's less regulated than here. And, you know, which may account for why the billionaires are so fond of it. But, you know, what happens when you have a highly unregulated form of capitalism like you have in Russia is you end up with oligarchs. And, you know, and as we have deregulated capitalism in the United States since the election of Ronald Reagan, what have we seen? The emergence of multi-billionaires. If you look at the period from World War II until Reagan's election, it was a 30-year period, there were very few people who became fabulously rich. Lots of businesses were created. It was a period of the strongest economic activity in the history of the United States. Three consecutive decades of annual GDP growth that averaged over each decade at least 3%. Which had never happened before in American history. I mean, this is just, it was solid. The middle class grew, everybody got richer, but the top tax rate was 91%. And then it was dropped down to 74% in 68. But you know, it was basically above 50%. And Reagan came in and dropped that down to 25%.
Sarah Palin would have called this lipstick on a pig.
Say that again.
Yeah, it's still a pig.
Yeah.
It's still communism.
It's still communism? No, what you know, communism is, you know, from each according to his ability, to each according to his needs. Everybody works as hard as they can at what they're good at and throws everything that they make into the collective pot, and then everybody, you know, says, here's what I need, and that comes out of the collective pot. And we know that, you know, communism works well in societies of fewer than 150 people. It works well at the tribal level. It works well on a kibbutz. It works well in very, very small communities and communes and monasteries and things like that. But you know, it does not work when you get beyond 150 people. And just like laissez-faire capitalism doesn't work when you get a large enough population that the writing mechanism of capitalism, which is shaming, no longer works. You know, if the laissez-faire theory is that businesses that screw their customers will eventually be put out of business because word will travel about them. But if in a large country, you can move from city to city with a rip-off business, and you know, the word never does travel. So, you know, it doesn't work in a very large society. So this is why we need to have these regulating systems. Corky, thanks a lot for the call. It's always nice to hear from you. We'll be back. Bob Ney is going to be with us. We'll talk media news in just a minute. Stick around. Check in with Bob Ney and Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, Ellen Ratner's new book. On the line with us, the author of Sideswiped, Bob Ney. Congressman, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. So what do you see at the top of the news?
Well, I'm getting into Trump-Russian madness trying to follow all these stories, literally.
I mean,
following them is tough. Let me start from this morning, where the Russian ambassador to the United States, and this was yesterday actually and released this morning, said that there were two important verbal agreements with Putin during their private conversation, and one would be arms control and the other would be Syria. Now, there could be a wide variety of things, although we really haven't found out what is coming from President Trump's end, because the staff, according to what we found out from the media sources, Tom, they don't know what happened. They weren't brought in on it.
Well, I mean, those could both be good things, Bob. I mean, wouldn't Donald Trump, if he worked out some kind of a deal with President Putin to have, you know, to help the refugees and bring some peace to Syria? And what was the other one you said?
Well, it was Syria, just in general, and then
the
other
arms
was,
control stuff.
Arms control.
Yeah, and arms control. I mean, those are desirable outcomes. I would think that Trump would be bragging about that.
Well, that's where I come into suspicion, because you're correct, and I gather what you're saying. If in fact it was something on the positive side, especially after the last few days of the barrage, you know, that the president's had from Republicans, also on his, you know, statements about Putin. I would think that would be shared with the staff. You know, their areas, you know, they can help, humanitarian aid, et cetera, and then a reduction of nuclear arms, of course. But that hasn't happened as far as we know. Now, there were reports this afternoon where we were picking up pieces where President Trump has now called for a second Putin meeting on top of everything. And he said his quote today is, this afternoon, is he is, quote, looking forward to meeting again with Russian President Vladimir Putin to begin implementing issues they discussed during their summit this year, which means, if you read through that they did do some kind of agreement, then they need to implement it. Hmm. Now, he had this major, you know, comment he made, and then he accused the news media of being, again, quote, an enemy of the people. So he's...
That is such strong language. I mean, that is the kind of language that you typically hear from dictators and tyrants.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And
no American president has ever said that in the history of this country, with the possible exception of John Adams, who imprisoned over 20 newspaper editors who were writing things that he didn't like. And that's why Thomas Jefferson didn't talk to him for 2 years and left town the day that the Alien and Sedition Act was signed in 1798.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
Very strong language, enemy of the people. We've heard that in movies. We've heard that in statements. We hear that in the Banana Republics. You know, you hear enemy of the people.
Yeah.
And that's the phrase he's used twice now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's
incredible.
Just,
so what else is up?
All of this, honestly, Tom, is mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, he's trying to back up now from wouldn't or would. But again, a lot of the Republicans have still held firm, not all of them, but a lot of them have held firm of the condemnation because the amount of heat, obviously, they're getting on the issue.
And yet the Republicans had two votes this morning. One was a committee vote, and I think the other was a larger one. One was to subpoena the translator. That was killed in the House Intelligence Committee, unanimously by the Republicans. And the other was to fully fund the program to allow states to strengthen their election infrastructure, and the Republicans shot that one down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's going on with your former party, Bob?
Well, I'm not there to help them.
It must be.
I don't know what's going on because, you know, we passed, obviously, with Steny Hoyer, the Help America Vote Act, massive, and Ted Kennedy, the late Ted Kennedy, yeah. You know, and did some things like that. And now you can't even pass the most simplest things to help with the election, you know, process because they don't want to do it. Now, they did bring up the resolution, of course, non-binding. Do you support ICE or don't you? And a lot of the Democratic side, you know, hit present, you know, versus a yes or a no on it. But right. That was brought up, of course, to make a divisive issue, you know, and to make a divisiveness within the Democratic side.
Well, and to generate ads for the fall.
Right, correct. Although, I do want to mention this, the health care, which you and I talked about specifically about a month ago when, you know, the campaigns were kind of starting out, and the Democratic side had targeted the health care. And at the time, a lot of people said, why are they doing that? Well, there is a reason, and they're continuing to do it. And that is because, in fact, in the Senate Democratic side is saying, hey, we need to enjoin and, you know, do something with a legal basis to go for pre-existing conditions to make sure we stand up against some of the attorney generals that want to eliminate it. Healthcare is going to blow up very, very soon as a major issue.
Yeah, I agree. And in part,
they own it.
Yeah, and in part, it's because the Republicans have taken a meat axe to Obamacare, and the result of that is the premiums are going to be exploding.
Correct.
Come October when these new numbers get rolled out. Bob Nagy, author of Sideswipe. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Jeff Charlotte's going to be with us, in fact. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.